The Big Granola, written by Russell T. Wright. Chapter 1. The Big Starting Stack.
I had the gnawing suspicion that I was being followed, and sure enough, when I turned around, I saw the tail. Hiding in plain sight, just like their training dictates, seen but unseen, its stripes helping it blend in. It was a tail, a literal tail, the tip of which was poking up from behind the low hedgerow that lined the walkway. A cat. I called out to it in the voice of a kindergartner, then belatedly scanned the parking lot to ensure no one had witnessed this embarrassing display. The cat was soothed by it, though, and he came out from his partial defilade. He was yellow and tough and had no interest in being petted or picked up or the interior of my building, but he seemed to recognize the green and tan Publix bag that dangled from my hand for what it was. I'd just come from the grocery in the middle of the day, and he was in luck. I had some tuna in there, star-kissed, yellow fin and olive oil, 4 cans, shrink-wrapped together. I'm always nice to cats. You never know. They might be little zen, like angels or whatever, dispatched to find out if you've become too much of an asshole. Plus, I thought he might bring me some luck. He liked the tuna, and when he wouldn't be coaxed inside, I went on my way. I wouldn't see him again there in Alligator Alley with small A's, not the real one down in the Everglades or wherever, and I didn't want to imagine why. And as it turned out, he didn't bring me any luck at all, not the good kind, anyway. That evening, a Monday in April, I was minding my own business, about to check into a low-stakes poker tournament at my local club down in Melbourne, washing my hands, humming along with Jumpin' Jack Flash, when a guy comes from the toilets in the back, a biker dude, and says, "Nice hand," as he pushes my friend Captain Zack, a yacht captain, into the urinal he's using. Captain Zack had been there for a while. It didn't take Mike Hammer to deduce that this fact might also help explain the biker dude's foul mood, because Captain Zack was a little guy with a pugnacious disposition, and he was probably drunk and had probably rubbed the guy's nose in it when he'd won a big hand at one of the cash tables. I see all this transpire in the mirror, and since the biker dude is in a bit of a hurry to get away but is still looking at Captain Zack, he knocks into me, causing water to spray all over the front of my jeans. He acts like it's my fault, and when I take issue with his assessment, he shoves me back against the sinks. This little altercation gives Captain Zack time to finish his business, then he takes over from there, tugging at the collar of the guy's black t-shirt, wrestling him to the ground. Having heard the commotion, one of the other biker dudes comes in, whereas I'm just trying to get out. He's a pretty big guy, I'm not a small guy, but he blindsides me and runs me over. I go to the ground but latch onto a passing ankle to keep Captain Zack from getting double-teamed. Once a Marine, always a Marine, ready to render what aid I could to a brother in arms. When a couple of security guys squeeze by to deal with the Captain Zack situation, the biker dude I'm restraining takes this as his cue to retreat, grumbling something to the effect that I would be seeing him and his friends again as he disappeared back into the poker room jungle beyond the overlapping walls of the men's room. Meanwhile, his friend, the one who was getting to know Captain Zack a little more intimately, was in a pretty bad way. He probably wasn't going to be seeing anybody for a while unless they visited him in the hospital. Captain Zack had been an Army Ranger. He'd seen a lot of combat. He knew how to handle his business. It was a level of rage, replete with guttural roars, maniacal giggling, and even a brief ecstatic ululation that might have been funny except for all the blood. Captain Zack was a little off. Yeah, he might be facing some jail time. Nothing like that ever happened there at 52 Pickup. It was a quiet little poker room frequented mostly by senior citizens, most of whom had more money and less excitement than they needed. Yet there, I stood looking like I'd pissed myself with schmutz from the men's room floor all over the back of my olive drab t-shirt. This wouldn't bode well for the tournament. I could feel it as I paid my money and found my seat. I hadn't done anything wrong. I was the quintessential innocent bystander, a victim even. But the poker gods, as it were, are skittish. It doesn't take much to turn them against you, which is not so different from life in general, I've found. I hadn't done anything to warrant my forced retirement from the FBI at the ripe old age of 35 either. But facts are facts, and the fact was that I had won exactly not much of anything since my arrival in the Sunshine State. Even so, this poker room had proven to be just about my only source of socialization, so I kept at it on Mondays and Fridays, and sometimes on Wednesdays for the Turbo Tournament. I'd been in the market for some divine intervention of the positive variety for a while now, and silently made that known at the start of every hand. Note to self, be careful what you pray for. As usual, my entreaties made no difference. I found myself pretty short-stacked well before the first break. A couple of big hands early didn't go my way. That's when the club director, a guy named Kev Smucker, came over and wanted a word. I thought it might have something to do with the fight in the bathroom, so I looked at my meager chip stack, which I could easily hold in one hand, and said, "What the hell," and tossed them into the middle just to get it over with. I got one caller, a guy named Forrest. He was one of those senior citizens I mentioned, a fellow Marine in his 80s, salt of the earth, and lucky as they come, but not this time. My weak 7-6 of clubs knocked out his ace-queen off suit when three more clubs showed up to make a flush. His stack was just a little shorter than mine, and so he was out of the tournament. There was still time to buy back into it, though. I made my apologies to Forrest, as one does, and he skulked off to do just that. Having doubled up, I was back in this thing, but Kev was insistent. He told the dealer to freeze my action, which wasn't ideal because my chip stack would remain the same against rapidly rising blinds. He said something bad had happened. I'd just won my first hand of the night, but I didn't argue. I got up and followed him through the tables back toward the offices. Kev Smucker was a stout little guy about my age. He dressed in a suit, all black, with a bifurcated beard. He had one of my business cards. It read, "Holden M. Cash, Private Detective," and he wanted to know if it was for real. Good question. The answer was both yes and no. I wasn't quite sure how to explain that I'd only made them up, these cards, because I felt weird about being retired. I wanted to have some job title, and private investigator seemed as appropriate as any given my background. And since you can't pretend to be a PI without actually being one, I'd taken the online course on a lark. It was something to do between poker tournaments besides working out and watching every old movie ever made. I'd handed out a few of the cards for contact info purposes only, with no intention of ever actually investigating anything. I guess I could have explained that to him, but something in Kev's tone put me on the defensive, so I showed him the license as proof. It seemed to satisfy him, and I found myself carried along, following him toward the cashier's cages, wondering what this was all about. "If this is about the fight in the bathroom," I said, "I had very little to do with that, regardless of what you might have heard. It's not like I was the one who nearly beat the guy to death or anything, if that's what you were thinking, because..."
"Not that,"
he said.
"We'd been trying to get those guys out of the place all afternoon."
"Yeah, that's what I was thinking," I said. We passed the colorful tables and all the schlubs hunched over their cards, others laughing and joking. We passed the oblong bar with the beautiful ladies who work mostly for tips in their skin-tight yoga pants and crop tops on both sides of it. When we passed the cages, I saw my old buddy Forrest there, about to pay the entry fee to get back in the tournament. I said something apologetic again, as one does, and presented my knuckles for a fist bump. Instead of a fist bump, however, Forrest, the octogenarian Marine, hauled off and kicked me in the groin. I dropped to my knees as he walked away back to the tables. "Good luck, Forrest," I managed to croak out. Kev Smucker hadn't seen it all go down.
"Come on, Max,"
he said at the door.
"I haven't got time for any foolishness right now."
"Yep," rasping. Be right with you. That's the kind of night it was. And that's the kind of case I was about to get dropped in my lap, whether I liked it or not. A real ball buster. And it would change my life in the most profound way, altering my understanding of the very nature of reality itself. Ursula Morand was a poker pro out of Miami. In addition to playing poker for a living, she'd been the managing director there at 52 Pickup for a number of months, and she'd been murdered, Kev said. It happened down in Miami over the weekend. A beautiful blonde, early 30s, she usually wore black, way too dressy for 52 Pickup. I'd noticed her a couple of times coming and going, but had never spoken to her. You could call her a savant. Ursula Morand was smart like a computer with a face made for TV. Having turned pro a couple of years back, she had already made a final table or two on the IPC, International Poker Circuit, for those of you not in the know. But I never put it together that the woman I'd seen slinking around the poker room was the one I'd seen on TV. We were at the top of the professional poker food chain there in little old 52 Pickup, and I never even knew it. Adding to her bona fides, Patrick Zimmerman, Big Granola, as he was known in the poker world, a big-time pro, was her coach, according to Kev. That gave her plenty of gravitas to anyone even remotely familiar with the worldwide poker scene. For all of her supposed gravitas, though, something wasn't adding up. I'd always thought Kev Smucker had been in charge, but I guess that wasn't the case. Ursula Morand was way too young to be running the joint. Any joint, really. She was easy to read to that extent from the couple of times I'd seen her. Immature was the best word to describe her, so there had to be more to it. It was a pretty good bet that whatever Ursula Morand had been into prior to her death, she had been into it way over her head. Kev and whatever other management there was there at 52 Pickup wanted to make sure that her death had nothing to do with the operation. But so far, Miami-Dade police had kept them out of the loop. They just wanted me to make contact and act as a liaison. That's all. I had to admit that I did need to consider a second income stream in addition to my monthly disability check. I was always going to have to do that sooner or later. And on top of that, my condo association had recently levied a hefty subsistence assessment. It was a lot of money, enough to put my finances on tilt, requiring that additional income stream to come sooner rather than later. Things were not going all that well for me at that particular point in time, I'm not going to lie. I was alone there in my newish Florida residency. My money situation wasn't great. I was still upset with the Bureau. Getting back in the game in some capacity probably wasn't the worst idea in the world, but I just didn't want to do it. I didn't see myself as the private eye type. I was the FBI type, and I was having trouble making that transition. Or any transition. At the same time, I found it difficult to tell Kev no. He seemed genuinely distraught over the death of his coworker. So instead of declining outright, I quoted him an outlandish hourly rate plus expenses. To my regret, he didn't bat an eye. Next, I tried the old, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it my way, no questions asked, ploy. Nothing doing.
Sure. Fine. Whatever.
Came the rapid-fire response. It was no use. Kev had called my bluff. I guess I was doing this.